Hi, so I'm here with my friend Josh, and he's an Amazon seller. He's made a ton of money in the stock market and a fully automated Amazon business, and we're going to break it all down for you. Yeah, thanks for coming on, dude.
Thanks, buddy. It's good to see you.
Good to see you. Sadly, it's the last day I'm with you. We've been traveling for like a month together.
It's been a month. It's been a month, and it's going to be hard to leave this place.
I know it is.
It's gorgeous out here.
It's amazing. But if you're Amazon, like, do you have a team that does it? Do you do most of your work?
Yeah, so I've got a team of two. Shout out Mervin and Hannah. They're awesome. They run the whole business. They do all the buying, sourcing, all of the admin tasks, and I pretty much just look at the P&Ls at the end of the month and pay them and issue bonuses and travel the world.
And a big thing with, but like, what's your bonus structure? How does that work?
Yeah, so we incentivize them with a percentage based bonus. So depending on how much profit we do and if we're hitting other goals in the business as far as spending profit that we expect to make off of their purchases, and then if we're consistently growing the business, we incentivize them with a percentage based bonus.
And is your bonus issued on the front half or the back half, like after the sale or before the sale?
After the sale. So we do monthly bonuses, depending on, again, if we hit our performance goals. And we will issue that usually around the first, second week of the month after the P&L has been rectified and we've seen whether or not we hit the goals we wanted to.
And have you been hitting the goal? I mean, I know we've been traveling. We've not been working much.
No, we have not been working at all. we had a great Q4. January, we rocked it. February and March tend to be a little bit of slower months, so they know that it might slow down a little bit. But yeah, we've been hitting the goals that we want to as far as margin and revenue go. So.
And. Like, do they just purchase on their own? Like, do you have to tell them what to purchase?
Yeah. It's gotten to the point now where I don't even look at their purchases anymore. They have never bought a product that hasn't sold. So, every once in a while, just for fun, if I need something to do, I'll go take a peek at the numbers and see kind of, you know, where they're at. So I have an idea of where our business is at. But other than that, they are very independent and, you know, they do their own research. They're always coming up with new ideas. I really like to, you know, encourage them to be creative. And we spend a lot of time talking about that because I think with virtual assistants, it's very easy for them to get into a system where, you know, you tell them what to do and they, you know, they follow the instructions exactly as you present them to them, where for us, we're always in a constantly changing market and that needs creativity. And that's really, you know, the driving force of growth is you can't be doing the same thing all the time. And so, especially with our lead, he's always looking for new sources, new ways to expand, new product categories, different ways where we can increase margin without having to tweak our business too much. And he's done a really great job of that over the last 6 to 9 months.
That's awesome. Like, and like they'll tweak themselves.
Yeah. And, you know, we make sure to let them know that, you know, when we set our goals as far as, you know, profit into per day or expected profit that they're generating every day, that we can back off of those numbers and know that our business is going to stay very similar and give them extra time to be, like I said, be creative, come up with new ideas and just, you know, have an open dialect about, you know, where they think the business should go. Because at this point, they know more than I do as far as, you know, the market is and what direction we're heading in. So
that's what you want at the end of the day. You don't want to be working the day, like day in,
100%, day out. Like, 100%.
Like if you work 12 hours a day on your Amazon business, and I'm just saying just like buying and selling stuff, like that's great. Your first year or two. But like after that, like you should be putting systems and processes in. Like you should not be prepping stuff. If you're scaling, like And then if you're not scaling it and you're still, like, there's so many other issues besides that one issue of, like, oh, I need to outsource more. It's probably a little more internal. You've got to look at your situation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think a big thing that a lot of people don't talk about when it comes to hiring this out either is, you know, they're spending your money. And that's a really tough one to teach because they have a concept of, you know, how much money is coming in and out of the business. And a lot of the time, you know, they're spending 2-3 times in a day what we pay them every month to operate the business. And that can be a little nerve wracking for them. But if you keep, you know, forcing that, you know, giving them positive reinforcement and pushing them to, you know, exceed what they've been doing, they learn to take on more risk, and that's been really positive for us.
And, like, it's been interesting since, like, I've been here, I know, but more in depth about your business and stuff, and, like, I think hearing somebody else, like, different aspects of the business,
yep,
like, you know, I threw you something that, like, I think will pan out really well for you, hopefully. I know your team's looking into that right now.
Yep.
I gotta ask you about that after the interview, but how it's going. But, like, but just talking to the people that either in, like, parallel business or something, like, because they can just throw different things in there.
Totally.
And it's just a different mindset because there's a fresh, clean slate. Like,
It is. And I think the point where we've gotten now too is we're very, very comfortable where we are as far as, like I said, revenue and margin go. And our, because of the way our margin pans out, it's, our cash flow is very strong. And so I don't worry too much about aggressive growth anymore, but at the same time, there is a lot of opportunity for us to be having, and we're not quite jumping on all of that yet. So slowly but surely, we will we'll continue to push in that direction.
And how do you manage your VAs traveling?
Yeah. I mean, so the way we have it set up is my original virtual assistant, he's been with me since November, December of 2022. He's also got a bachelor's degree in psychology, so he is pretty much also my HR type of guy, where he really manages the other one. And then if there are issues within the business or things that they need to reach out about, typically it's just those two having a meeting once or twice a week together to, you know, see where everything's at, and then he will reach out to me. And every month or so, we'll have a team meeting, and I'll have separate meetings with him, you know, every couple weeks when I can. It does definitely get tough while you're on the road all the time because, you know, half the time I'm in a bus or on a plane and jumping on my laptop and having a two-hour meeting with Mervin is not conducive to that. So it does get tough, but at the end of the day, I have so much trust in them that, honestly, I think I could probably die right now, and if we had them on automatic payments, the business would run itself for at least a year without them even realizing. So, yeah.
I mean, that's amazing because, like, I know you guys have big travel plans this year.
Yeah.
And everything. And, like, you're like, yeah, I think I'm going to have to leave my laptop in Dubai for 3 months. I'm like, how? I'm like, I can understand, like, not being all the time, but he's like, no, I'm just leaving it there. Like, I mean, it might be tough, but yeah, go into that a little
Yeah, bit. Yeah. So, I mean, I personally don't have really many issues with my assistants having access, or at least the lead one having access to our credit cards and whatnot, and they have access to all, he has access to all of my email accounts. So, really, the only big issues that could come up is if we faced a suspension or something like that, which, that would be an issue that we'll cross that bridge when we get there. But as far as, like, making sure payments are going through, all of our cards are set on automatic payments, getting the prep center paid, getting them paid, that's all stuff that he can deal with. So, yeah, I don't worry about it too much. And I'm always, you know, I will have my phone with me, so if there are issues, he can always text me, and I can, you know, do my best to instruct him while he has a laptop and I don't.
Like, how do you find your VAs?
Yeah, so the first one, I got a great friend, Nigel. Shout out, Nigel. He had a big team. This was way back when I was actually doing OA more. He had a big team of virtual assistants to run a leads group. And, you know, progressively over time, they started slowing down on that. He went more into wholesale. And wasn't dealing with that as much. So, but he loved his team, and he was not about to let any of them go, because he, you know, wanted to at least make sure they had a good, you know, long-term position somewhere before he, you know, passed them on. And so we got to talking. I was, you know, I was transitioning my business model at the time, and I was looking for extra help, but I wasn't looking to have someone on full time quite yet. And so he kept Mervin on like 50-50. So we would actually split him like 20 hours a week, 20 hours a week, just to test it out. And it quickly got to the point, probably within 3-4 weeks, where I was like, all right, like, I'm ready to take him on full time because we need the help. And it's been upward and onward since.
I think, like, when you have a virtual assistant team, like, you just see, like, you have one person start plugging some holes.
Yeah.
And then you can just see there's 10 more other holes that can get plugged, and you're leaking money.
Absolutely.
And if you're able to start plugging them with, like, lots of the virtual assistants or giving them those tasks that you don't like, I would feel you hate some tasks.
Yeah, definitely.
And, but you also enjoy probably some, too, that you just might keep for yourself. I guess you're full so hands-off now.
Yeah, yeah. And it got, well, I think that really comes down to, like, what are you really good at in your business, too? And at the end of the day, for me, my highest ROI task was always the buying portion.
Yeah.
And so we started slow. He took over all of our administrative tasks where, you know, if I was buying something, I have to input all the buy costs and deal with all the software stuff. All the back end stuff that takes all way more time than it does to just click buy on things. And he took that over pretty quickly. And as he did that, he also got a pretty good idea of what we were buying, because he was seeing all the products, he was seeing the kind of buy costs that we were getting them for, the ranks. And so in the middle of that, I was also kind of teaching him just a little bit about the sourcing and buying aspects of the business. And then from there, he kind of hopped into just buying our replenishables, getting a good idea of how fast things are going to sell, how much quantity we should be purchasing on certain items. And over time, you know, he became pretty much just as good as me at it. Eventually we decided to get our second, and, between the two of them, that pretty much alleviated the need for me to be, you know, in the day-to-day purchasing and whatnot.
I mean, I don't need to go into detail, but, like, I know you run through crazy margins, and, I mean, it's within Amazon stuff, like, and you're so hands-off. I mean, that's amazing, like, how you set that up. And, like, we got to talk about how we met. Like, this is kind of a wild story.
Yeah.
So, like, I did not know Josh in the slightest. I didn't even know who Josh Kupiak was.
Yep.
I was last
you
name.
You got
right.
it. You got it.
Who Josh was. But we're both in Thailand at the time, and... like, I'm posting, I'm in Thailand, and then we have, like, a couple mutual friends, and I think Ben Books the World.
Shout out Ben Books.
He was a previous episode
on
the pod, and, like, he was there, we had a mutual friend, and, like, texted both of us saying, like, hey, I know other Amazon sellers that are in Thailand, like, you guys should link up, something along those lines. I get his number, I start texting Ben, and, like, he's on the other side, so we kind of just let it rock for a while. And then I'm walking the street, and it's Ben and Josh. And Ben looks at me and says, Steven, I'm like, where did I meet you?
Yeah, you thought he was from a hostel or something that you'd met him at. And then he's like, oh, Ben. Because you guys started talking about Miles and I think Jackson and whatnot.
Yeah.
And we got to it. We ended up going out to dinner that night, and none of us were able to pull cash. So Steven fronted us $1,000 apiece to get by. And we've been hanging since.
I think a big thing, too, is like, I literally did not even know these guys when I gave you money. Like,
yep.
I was like, I know the mutual connections we have.
Right.
I said, if they're friends with them, they could ask me for, I mean, $1,000 is like $30, but like, they could ask me for a couple hundred US dollars, and it's fine because the people I know, they don't want to ruin reputations with and stuff. And at the end of the day, like, that's a big thing too. Like, the amount of trust of who throws you something. It, 100%. And you've made a ton of money in the stock market. We don't need to go into specifics, but like, like, is there anywhere you can recommend somewhere to start? Like,
I mean,
what you kind of do?
It really depends on what, you know, you're looking for in the stock market, how much you have to start with. I started with options trading because I was starting with a lot smaller portfolio, which is highly leveraged, you know, futures, Forex another. I don't really do Forex that much, but futures, options trading were really the places that I started. As far as trading goes, it's less about the amount of intelligence you have in understanding companies and balance sheets and all that. It's really much more about risk management and being able to be very content with yourself winning and losing and not allowing that to affect your emotional state while you're doing it. That's the biggest key is, you know, risk management and being able to manage your emotions. And if you can do that, you can be a profitable trader, whether something's going up or down, you know, you can always make money.
And like, would you recommend like Amazon over like stocks, like to make some money? Like,
I think the really cool thing about Amazon, because I actually hopped into that after I had been trading for a while, was that it seemed so similar as far as the charting and whatnot goes. It's if you can break down a stock chart, you can break down a Keepa chart, straight up. And it seems so much easier because you don't have, you know, a million day traders on a single stock in a day. You know, you got a few guys on a listing with a few units here and there. It's very predictable where the price is going to go. And you know, I quickly learned that I really enjoyed that. Especially due to the fact that every single time I got a sale, money was coming into my pocket, you know, period. Whereas with the stock market, every single time you make a trade, you're going to win or lose. And a lot of the time with trading, you know, you don't really feel the winning on the way up, but you feel the losing on the way down. And that's a tough one to grasp. So I still do both. And it's changed over time, but I really jumped into the Amazon thing more because I saw it being a more long-term business and something that I could pull myself away from more, where I'm not just sitting looking at, you know, the computer for 16 hours a day, just looking at candlesticks and and going to bed, waking up at 4:30 in the morning, doing it all over again, and eat, sleep, and breathe that, which is, you know, that's what it takes. But at the same time, I think a big thing with that as well was that it really pushed me away from a lot of the people in my life too, because the only thing I cared about was talking about money, stocks. And most of the time, people really don't want to hear about that stuff. So, you know, it definitely was, I would say one thing about it is it can definitely be almost like dehumanizing if you're just the only thing you care about is looking at candlesticks and you know, pluses and minuses. It's it pulled me away from the things that I really love to do, my hobbies and all that stuff. I would, you know, it would be a beautiful day outside and I would sit and look at the computer and trade all day. You know, I missed out on a lot of stuff with my friends and whatnot, and for better or for worse, but it was very consuming, and so I kind of had to transition that into something else that, you know, was another great vehicle for me to be able to make money, but something that seemed a little bit, had a little bit more forward guidance to it, and was something that I could pull myself away from more long term.
I think a big thing about Amazon too, like going back to your friends stuff, it's like it's a lot about just being with a group. Like,
yeah, it is.
And it's funny, like I've met three other Amazon sellers on this trip. I didn't plan to meet you, but I hopefully meet Ben at some point. But yeah. Like, there was another guy we met, like friends of friends. We were supposed to interview with him, but he got sick.
Shout out Jordan.
but like, you know, rolling around here, I remember like after a couple of days hanging with you, you're like, gosh, man, it feels good to talk about money with somebody.
It does.
Because everybody travels got, you know, a couple thousand bucks. They're trying to make it last.
A couple thousand bucks and a dream is what they got.
We're like, all right, we want something nice, no hostels. We'll hang out at them. But,
yeah,
like, it's a big thing. And it's, like, out here, I mean, like, when I came out to Thailand, like, I made sure I was broke because I spent all my money on inventory.
Hell, yeah.
But, like, yeah, I mean, like, did you trade crypto at all? Or?
No, I never really got into crypto at all. That one's hard for me to understand because when I'm looking at, I really only will trade 5-7 different stocks and index funds. religiously. Like, I've been looking at the same ones for three years now, so I have a good idea of what's going on more of a long-term basis. And with crypto, there's no intrinsic value to it. Whether it goes up or down is just purely based on, you know, demand. And really, I look at that as just pure greed. And another thing that I tend to think about it is that, you know, with the foothold that the United States has on the world money supply, being probably 80-85% of the world money supply, as soon as that ever becomes a real threat, I see them banning it, making it illegal, making sure that we don't lose that foothold. So, not to say that the chart right now is looking great. I mean, it's at 72,000 right now. It's probably got an upward price target of 110. But at the end of the day, are there margins behind that? You know, is there forward guidance that, you know, a CEO is giving to it? No, it's purely based on buying and selling. And that's really, really difficult for me to get around. Where with the stock market, it's like I can look at a balance sheet, you know. I can have a really good idea of, you know, companies like NVIDIA or Intel, Palantir. This is not financial advice. And I can say, you know, this company is heavily in AI. You know, they've got a really, really good foothold on the chip market, whatever that may be. You know, I have certain things that I like to look for. And so you have to have a really good idea of where the market's going, you know, and have the propensity for risk to put large sums of money down on companies. And I think with the age that we're at too, it makes a lot of sense, because it's like we're right on the brink of AI really becoming a big deal. And it's funny because I talk to a lot of like my mentors that are older that have seen, you know, like, you know, 50s, 60s, pushing 70, where they've seen the dot-com bubble, they saw the mortgage bubble, and they're telling me, you know, and really just the tech revolution overall, because we've made so many advancements in the last 25 years, and they're all telling me AI's the next big one. And so that's what I really like to look at is these companies that have strong balance sheets, that are buying up a lot of other companies, and that are going to be around in 10, 20 years. So keep it simple. Like, I don't need to, you know, I don't need to pick the next Apple.
Yeah.
You know, I'd rather just trade it, right? And that's kind of how I look at it.
Does it make more sense, like, to pick, like, big companies that are more stable? Or is like,
absolutely.
Better going for, you know, some random guy on the internet, like, oh, buy this one, it's going to go to the moon or something.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think you have all your companies that have really strong balance sheets and have you know, price-to-earnings ratios that are very well, they're priced very well. And then you've got a few other companies, for example, AMD, Intel, TSMC, ASML, companies like that, where they have been around for a really long time, and chips are becoming so advanced now, and we own everything. You know, the U.S. owns all of the intellectual property around chips. And these big companies that need these chips to, you know, really power these really high-performance AI machines, they need them. They're buying hundreds and hundreds of thousands, millions of these chips. So you're going to see that be reflected in the balance sheets of these companies, and you're going to see their margins and revenue go up. And as that happens, based on their price-to-earnings ratio, you're going to see their stock price reflect that. And so that's really what I'm looking at for the most part.
That's awesome. I mean, like,
yeah. I mean, have you seen AMD in the last 3-4 months?
I have not.
Shot from like 96 to 220 in the last.
Damn.
Yeah. And NVIDIA, you know, is up was pushing over 900 not too long ago. Yeah. So.
And it seems like a lot of this stuff, I mean, we go pedal back even to Amazon a bit. Like, it seems like so much of the stock stuff and the Amazon things the same. Like, you know, you got your 90% of your, it's like the 80-20 rule. 80% of your profit comes from like
100%.
Same couple of places. I forget how the wording goes. Like, but it seems like the same thing for you. Like, you're buying a lot of the same thing. Like, you keep it down to those like seven, I think you said, those big companies. And that's where your money's made. Versus like, you know, everyone trying to like, trying this all the way back in Amazon. Like, you know, everyone trying to find these little things, these, the next big bolo, the next big thing. But you just roll with the your good stuff, the same suppliers, same websites, totally. Same ASINs. Like, those are where their big money's made. You just double down one place. But
100%. And I think, you know, the same thing with Amazon or whatever it is that most people, everyone can make it. You know, every single person has the ability to do it. It's just, how long can you consistently do it for, even when you're losing and losing and losing and losing, and keeping at it to the point where, you know, you will figure out how to do it. It's just, you know, making sure that you are taking, again, proper risk management, whether that's, you know, blasting $100,000 on an Amex Plum card, or, you know, buying, you know, way too many call options on a company that's got a really volatile stock price, whatever that is. If you can keep at it and keep at it and keep at it and keep your risk management under control, you will win eventually. Yeah. You know, it's there's no secret formula to it. It's consistency, it's time, and gaining experience. And the only way to gain experience is to do it.
Yeah.
And yeah.
I mean, so many people try it and they're like, oh, this doesn't work, or like, it is wrong. Like, you literally follow the same steps. Like, yeah. Like, a lot of people will say, like, if you're coming in, at least through Amazon there, because you can talk stock side, but we'll go back and forth kind of how they're close. But, like, you look at, like, you know, like, I still recommend a lot of people start with, like, RA or, oh my gosh, like, even books. Like, yeah. If you don't have much capital, you can't really even invest into something, like, learn, like, really what the cream of the crop is.
Yeah.
Start with some basic things that just make sense. Like,
100%. It's in front of you. And come into it with the mindset where you know, I'm going to be terrible at this at the start, right? And to look up to those people and to provide enough value to the people that are above you and not allow your ego to get in the way where, you know, they will end up, you know, feeding you this, that, you know, and understanding that there are people that have done this, there are people that are ahead of you, and they all have something to learn from.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that's a really big part of it too, is it's not a lonely game. As much as like the actual growth aspect of all this stuff is a super lonely game, it takes a community, or it's really, really hard to do it long term.
It does. I mean, I've tried to do it solo, at least the Amazon side.
Yeah.
And I've done it. But like when you make it with a crew, you're on the calls with your boys and stuff.
Exactly. And it, whether it's just motivation or whether that's you just learning how to, you know, speak to other people. Learning the lingo, you know, just learning how to talk to people that are ahead of you in some way and being able to also reciprocally provide some value to them, you will make it long term, no doubt.
Yeah.
And there's so many opportunities that come out of it because so many of the Amazon guys are not just Amazon guys. And I think that's a really big thing. It's like, I don't think many of the guys that really make it in Amazon long term, you know, are saying, that's the end all be all. I'm gonna wipe my hands and retire and walk away. There's very, very few of those. Whereas like, it's a stepping stone. And everybody's got more ideas. They've all got different stuff they wanna do. They all know certain people that are doing really cool different stuff within business. And over time, you just start to get more opportunities. Yeah. You know, they just, they get thrown at you. And as long as you have, you know, the time, experience, money to take on those opportunities, that's what's gonna propel you forward beyond that.
Exactly, and like Amazon's a great place to start. Like you're looking at it. Like
totally.
It's like people, Amazon, like the fees, this and that. But like, yeah, but like they literally get rid of half your logistics, dealing with most of the customers, like dealing with all that crap.
100%.
And it's the first step, because then you learn, all right, maybe you pivot to another business after a year or two, mm-hmm. when it's kind of automated like you, like, you know? Like that's really at the end of the day, like where it can go.
Yeah.
And that's why it's a great start. And you're getting these other entrepreneurs that you'll meet at a lower level and they'll rise up. Like people, especially a lot of these guys in my circle, like they want to do other things. Like they want to build things that are different than Amazon, but Amazon can still give them that $15,000, $20,000, $40,000, $50,000 a month in profit with a team automated. Like that, at the end of the day, to me is awesome. Even if it's $5,000,
It's totally.
It's so easy if it's around my VAs at that point.
100%.
Could you get 100%. A VA to trade stocks for you?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think you'd have to understand the market well enough, and sort of create your own algorithm to a certain degree. Yeah. But yeah, you could definitely do that.
That'd be funny as heck.
I mean, if we really think about it, most of these big traders, you know, most of these big funds, you know, all their floor traders are pretty much VAs at the end of the day. So, I mean, they're working for somebody else and they're using their money. So
true, very true. Let's see.
And at the end of the day, too, most of these traders are very good at what they do. Yeah. Like, fun fact, you know, 95% of mutual fund managers do not beat the S&P 500.
Yeah.
And your parents probably have all their money in 401ks given to those guys at a 1.1% expense ratio, just sucking on their portfolios, doing nothing to help them out. And yeah, they'll be like, oh, I was up 37% this year. Yeah. And on a, you know, 3-4 year basis, like the S&P has blown it out of the water with a, you know, expense ratio that's a, you know, probably less than a tenth of what they're charging, which is silly. And it's sad. It's there's really not enough financial education around it where most people, if like you hear this so much, it's like most people would be better off just buying the index funds and doing it themselves. I mean, it's scary, and you know it depends on what time in your life you're at. Like, I would not necessarily recommend that to a 60-70 year old at this point, but if you're, you know, 20s, 30s, even early 40s, like, there's no reason for you not to at least learn and see where, you know, that, you know, 3% match that your company's giving you is going to, because it's probably just getting thrown in some mutual fund and some guy's taking a huge expense ratio off that. And when he gets his 1%, he doesn't care if, you know, your stuff goes up or down. It doesn't matter.
Most people just look like, oh, my stuff went up this year. Great.
Like, yeah. And it's unfortunate. And that's really where, you know, the bulk majority of the money is sitting in these three big companies, State Street, BlackRock, Vanguard.
Yep.
They own most of the retirements and pensions in America. They own, you know, close to half of all the indexes, and they call the shots.
Yep.
And most people don't even realize that that's where all their money's going.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, like, you do, I mean, my theory always is, like, if you do what everybody else is not doing.
Yeah.
You'll win 10 times faster.
No doubt.
Everybody tells me, Steve, don't start a business, don't do this, don't do that. Like, oh, like, you can't do that full time. You can't travel the world and stuff. And they're like, nowadays, I said, oh, yeah, Steven, what do you do again?
Yeah.
Like, how do you do that? Like, wait, you've been traveling literally the last 3 months? I'm actually coming up for 3 months. I was in Florida for...
That's crazy.
And, like, you know, we're still pumping. I think last month we did 140,000 revenue. I worked about 10 hours.
Nice.
A lot of that's outsourced. And, like... You know, everything's possible. It just takes time. Like, don't try to get VAs at the start. Just understand.
10 hours of work and 3 hours of yelling at your VA. No, for real, though. Yeah. Killing it.
Your VAs are your people. Like, you gotta keep them in line. But you also need to treat them like family, because...
Yeah. And I would say one thing about that, too, that we've really focused on is... Because we actually added a third VA... and you could tell that she was not going to be a good fit within a few days, and we cut her really fast. And there's a lot of value in small. My mentor always told me, you know, when you're small, you're dynamic. And so, you know, be okay also with seeing that, you know, there's 18, 19-year-olds. I won't shout them out, but we already know who it is out of Philly. Doing, you know, $600,000-$800,000 a month in revenue and absolutely killing it. And, you know, and then starting out, you know, you might be, you know, looking to quit your job. You just got out of college, whatever that is. You're looking for something. You're looking for a way out.
Yeah.
I think that's really what it comes down to for everybody that actually makes it too is, you know, you're running from something. You're looking for a way out of where you're at. And, you know, not needing to... you know, pump it up too fast to the point where, you know, you're going to put yourself in unpredictable positions, and being okay, you know, slow rolling it just a little bit, and knowing also when to take the right amount of risk on, as far as scaling up, but keeping it small, really is, you know, you've only got one VA and you're doing what, 2.5 times the amount of revenue? Oh, you do? We don't have to talk about that. That might get you in trouble.
A few months we can talk about that.
Yeah, exactly. Once the paper's out.
Yeah, once the paper's out, we're good. But yeah, I mean, like, VAs are amazing. It's just
they're great.
Building out teams and managing it. When you can get it, like, managing well and, like, they have goals and stuff.
Totally. And I guess what I was really trying to get at there was, like, I have friends that have a dozen VAs, and we do more profit than they do.
Yeah.
And, you know, I would much rather have a really close relationship with my lead or my two VAs that I have and be able to really track down what they're doing and where and how I can get a higher, you know, return on equity from them than, you know, getting 12 VAs so I could just buy more.
Well, at one point I tried to scale VAs, but like they just weren't trained.
Right.
They just weren't what I wanted.
Totally.
And, you know, I have one really good one. It does a lot. Like I'm also going to be switching some of my other VAs. I'll get the piece of paper.
Have you ever heard the rule in business that the square root of your employees creates half the creative output for your company?
I've not heard that one.
Which is crazy to think about because it's like, say you have a 10,000 employee company, 100 of them create half the output.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And so it's like as you grow, you become less efficient. And so, you know, really getting good at what you do when you're small is what's going to propel you to get to those big numbers like you're at now. Which is, and you've proven that, you know.
But like even though you don't pump not 1/3 of my revenue, I think you said.
Yeah.
But his net margin is crazy. But like his business is just structured differently.
Yeah.
Like I'm more high volume. You're more like, you know, you grab things here and there. But like there's super high ROI. In highest margins I've seen in the game for like in Amazon. But dude, yeah, I mean, it's great having you on here.
Yeah, you too, buddy. I'm going to miss you.
I know, I'm going to travel with you, but I'll see you again soon.
We'll see you again soon.
Thank you all for listening. Cool. Josh Kusiak right here.
Steven Rayner. Steven Does Business.
Steven Does Business.
We out.
We out.
Clip it.